Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz.
Yesterday morning, or perhaps towards the afternoon, I was intrigued by a statement that was shared by National Treasury, which gave us some context around an update on Itala Bank. For many of you who might not be familiar with the bank, a quick refresher, it's largely based within the province of KZN, and that is essentially where it's been able to help facilitate the growth, the savings and investments into two key areas of economic performance there. Agriculture, of course, in certain businesses, but it's really been the mainstay of much of the economic development we see in the province of KZN. So much so that over some time, it's also been able to take deposits from customers. However, the challenge is that Itala was not initially registered for that. And through the years, it's been receiving exemptions and extensions to its licensing conditions. However, has flouted some of those rules from a governance point of view. It's also been challenged by leadership issues, a lack of adequate IT infrastructure, and just a lack of vitality to keep the bank competitive within the current market and compliant with the regulators. A few years ago, 2 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, it was placed under curatorship, and lots of questions were raised around how bank customers who have deposits in the bank will be compensated. This is where our regulators, the Prudential Authority, have come to the rescue to essentially allow FNB as a sole bank to facilitate the payouts of these deposits to customers of Itala Bank. So far, we understand that this is going to unlock 2.2 billion rand to repay Itala depositors. To help add context to the story, some color and maybe even some perspective from a homely point of view, given the closeness that Itala does have to many South African and KZN-based households and businesses, we're joined by a good friend of the show, one who has put in a lot of research into understanding the breakdowns at Itala, independent analyst Kaya Sithole. Jobe Sauborn.
Good evening, and good evening to the listeners. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. You're the first person that crossed my mind, I must say, when I read the statement from National Treasury and followed up with a few other articles, because I do recall you had shared a lot more detail that offered a concise view for us to understand the challenges that Itala has been facing as a bank and financial services institution, but also linking the cultural relevance, the societal investment that it's made into the community of KZN. I'm keen for us to give us a refresher. I tried to, broad brush strokes in terms of where the challenges lie. But for those who aren't familiar with Itala, maybe remind us again as to why this is an institution that we should be paying attention to.
Well, I think the long and short of it is that it is a unique institution in the sense that its existence predated the democratic dispensation, and it was in the financial services space, and that it obviously enabled a lot of people that were in the then Zulu Bantustan to have access to the credit market. And when the transition happened, the decision was taken that it should be allowed to actually still survive, to still exist. However, at that particular point in time, we'd had particular developments in the regulation of the financial services industry, particularly the Reserve Bank and the Mutual Banks Act, which unfortunately, in the way they were written, left Itala Bank out of the loop in the sense that it could only continue its activities on the basis that it had to have an exemption that said, even though you are not a bank as defined in the Banks Act, will allow you to take deposits, which is something that no one else can do, with the understanding that eventually you're going to regularize your structure, your shareholding model, so that you can be able to legitimately take deposits. Unfortunately, that never happened. And at some point in time, the Reserve Bank took the view that the exemptions themselves were not, an entitlement. And in the absence of Itala doing what was asked of it, what was required of it, that exemption not being renewed meant that it no longer could take deposits. But of course, if an institution has been around since 1959, there's a lot of people who only want to transact or only want to put their money with the institution. So that's really what we're dealing with now. The question of those that had put their money into the institution that has now lost the ability to take on additional deposits because the exemption has now lapsed, what should happen to their money? And that's where FNB has been asked to step in.
Got you. And maybe just for us to understand that process, I do understand FNB is just facilitating the payment of these particular funds. No pressure for any consumers to actually open up bank accounts with them. But help us understand what actually happens in the background. Is the money coming from Itala itself? Is National Treasury funding the 2.2 billion? Or is FNB being a friendly neighbor and saying, oh, well, we've got some cash to spare. Here we go. We're paying out these deposits.
Well, the third part is definitely not the answer. FNB is not being friendly to anyone.
True.
But the more important dimension is the question of how one, you know, can facilitate deposits and withdrawals. And that is through participation in something that we refer to as the National Payment System. So the National Payment System is the over, you know, the big system that every bank has to be a member of in order for it to facilitate these particular activities. And again, because Itala was never a bank as defined in the Banks Act, what it then had to do is that it had to partner with another other banks in what we refer to as a sponsorship agreement. So its sponsorship agreement was actually with APSA. So in simple terms, it was using APSA's license in order to be able to participate in the national payment system. Okay. And at the point in time when the Reserve Bank said the exemption is not going to be renewed, it coincided with APSA saying that, well, actually, we are no longer interested in pursuing this sponsorship agreement. And it was only through litigation that APSA was then forced to sort of carry on beyond the date that they had in mind. Mm-hmm. So because it is not a standalone participant in the national payment system, even before today's conversation, even, you know, over the past 10, 20 years, all of Italia's deposits have actually been, and withdrawals have actually been facilitated through an agreement that it had with APSA. So it doesn't have a standalone standing, if you can, with the national payment system. So when that relationship ended, it was then a question of, well, can you find a new relationship? And you can imagine that when the Reserve Bank has said that we've got an issue with you, it's unlikely that all the other banks that have to maintain that relationship with the Reserve Bank are going to say, oh no, we're going to step in and we're going to sort you out. Mm. So what eventually ends up happening is that it is the Reserve Bank itself that then actually then calls upon one of the banks to say that, look, we need to be able to facilitate this particular payout. Can one of you, as members of the national payment system, do it? So that's the first part. The second part is a simple question of, well, where the money comes from. Mm-hmm. So what happens here is that when you have an institution that goes into a particular a crisis of this nature, there is the question of whether those deposits can be guaranteed or can be paid out.
Yes.
So the most obvious example, and perhaps an example that will resonate with most people, is what happened in the case of VBS Mutual Bank. And in VBS, it was Nedbank that stepped up and said that, look, we are going to facilitate the payouts. But the question was, where does the money come from? Mm-hmm. So in the case of VBS, it was that everyone who had deposited money up to 100,000 rand that had now been lost in the quagmire would get a particular payout. And since VBS, we've actually had the finalization of what is essentially a guarantee scheme. And that guarantee scheme compels all the banks to participate in a system that says that if anything ever goes wrong, your depositors should not be the ones that lose out. So they must get a particular payout up to a particular level. So what has happened in the case of Itala is that National Treasury said that, look, there has to be something sorted out here on behalf of the depositors. And I think they put up an amount of 2.2 billion rand to say this is what has to be paid out in relation to what we understood the depositors' book to be at that particular point in time. So it is that particular amount of money that FNB has actually been asked to facilitate. So FNB is not losing anything. It's simply enabling it because it is an active participant in the national payment system.
Got you. Thank you for the clarity there. Coming back to where the money comes from, this is different from CODI, right? Which is the Corporation for Deposit Insurance, where South African banking customers have their deposits protected to up to 100,000 rand. In this case, National Treasury, if I understand you correctly, is saying depositors will get the full amount without any limitations, and the total is around 2.2 billion.
Yeah, and I think that it's simply a question of timing issues, because the finalization of CODI, as you referred to it, happened long after these issues had started and had germinated. And I think the difficult question is that even if Itala had been a viable institution, if it hadn't reached this crisis, the question of whether it could legitimately participate in that deposits insurance scheme is a matter of what the regulators at that point in time would have said in relation to the activities that it's undertaking, particularly if it was the same regulators that said, no, actually, we don't think you should be allowed to still carry on these activities unless you get a full spectrum license, either as a mutual bank, if that's what you choose to do, or as a full service bank. So it's kind of become a more complicated story because of all the parts that have been moving alongside each other.
100%. What happens to Itala Bank now? Any means or ways and avenues to consider regarding resuscitation? And I guess just, you know, the loss of a legacy within the province of KZN as well.
What happens to Itala Bank now is that the lawyers make money. And that simply means that there will be litigation, and the litigation is either on the question of what are the powers of Mr. Kruger, who was sent by as the repayment administrator. It's the question on what Parliament can do in order to say, well, actually, we still believe such an institution should exist. It's a question of, well, how did Parliament get it wrong a few years ago? Mm. Because what happened here, the crux of the problem is that the Banks Act is very clear that a provincial state, a provincial owned entity, which Itala is, it is owned by the province of KZN, simply cannot apply for a banking license. Mm-hmm. So there's no point in Itala even thinking of applying for a banking license until it sorts out the shareholding model. Now, unfortunately, a few years ago, when the bill was in Parliament to sort of try and address that, for some odd reason, for some truly bizarre reason, mm-hmm. that particular clause was overlooked. So we ended up emerging with a clause that did say there has been an amendment, but that amendment did not go far enough. And in fact, what that amendment simply said is that other national, state-owned entities may indeed apply. In other words, if you can say that, look, this was an entity owned by a state enterprise or one form or another, then you can apply for a banking license. Provincial entities still cannot. So because Itala is still a provincial entity, that amendment became meaningless to them. So one point would be to revisit that amendment and say this is the way it should go. And if not, revisiting that amendment, then create the financial capacity for Itala to then say we are detaching ourselves from our current shareholder. That's what the Post Bank had to do, because the Post Bank was owned by the Post Office. Uh-huh. And at the point in time when they wanted to do this, it was very clear that the Post Office as a shareholder was not going to be acceptable. So you either go back and lobby Parliament to change the law, or you find a way to then say we're buying ourselves out of this complicated shareholder model. We're going to be an independent, autonomous entity with the financial capital to actually apply for a banking license. Because a banking license is not a matter of, well, you got a salary, Google from KFM last week, so you want to go and apply for a banking license. No, you need deep pockets. And that is what would have to be made available. And the province of KZN, in simple terms, simply just doesn't have the money.
Kaya, you've explained it so beautifully, because even the process of changing the shareholding doesn't necessarily translate into them automatically getting a banking license. It's quite a strenuous process, and one with high levels of controls, as we know, regarding Basel III through the Prudential Authority. Jobe, before I let you go, I'm just intrigued to take a look at when we look at the banking environment in South Africa and how the Prudential Authority, through the various agreements it has, like the deposit guarantees, sponsorship agreements, I'm very quickly reminded of African Bank and VBS, as you alluded to earlier, where African Bank in particular had the separation of the good bank from the bad bank. And as a result, we see it now in its new structure in terms of its glory. What does this tell us, I guess, about the governance and the controls that we have within the banking fraternity in South Africa?
It's a complicated story, and I think you probably have, I would say, probably three different dimensions. You've got the banks that are regarded as SIFIs, and we call them so strategically important as financial institutions, they absolutely cannot be allowed to fail. So it's the big four banks, as we traditionally know them. It's Investec and it's Capitec. So those banks, absolutely nothing is allowed to go wrong there. So the vigilance around them, the compliance costs are absolutely enormous. They've got enough balance. They've got balances that are big enough to be able to absorb that. But it's also quite clear that that compliance burden that those banks can afford is not a compliance burden that everyone else can afford. So that's why you have this alternative option of the mutual banks dimension, for example, which then says that, look, we do want you to be able to undertake these activities, but the scale and the scope has to be very different to what First Rand or Standard Bank can do, because if something goes wrong, you kind of wouldn't have the capacity to be able to make good on all your commitments. So we do have quite a differentiated regulatory regime. Whether it goes far enough and creates enough appetite and capacity for people to get into the bank and financial services system, that is still a matter of debate. Then you also have what we refer to as the development financial institutions, which in my view operate in a regulatory limbo, because they are not governed by the by the Prudential Authority, because they're not the big banks, and they also don't really have, you know, a very clear explanation of what they need to do, how they need to do it, and how that it gives confidence to others that you can put money to them. So we've got complexities in the regulatory landscape that do need to be revisited, but unfortunately most of that will come long after Itala has really probably seen its last days as a deposit taking institution. Remember, it can still do other activities as the IDFC, the Itala Development Financing Corporation, but I don't think the banking activities are going to be what defines it going forward.
Got you. But even with that, confidence, right, and trust gets eroded, especially when it comes to managing money and financial institutions. Typically, investors might opt to go with other partners. Would that not be a concern?
It's always going to be a concern. And I think, obviously, what we saw with the African bank conversation is that the regulators at that point in time took the view that, look, any failure of this particular institution would undermine confidence in the system at large. Mm. So what you ended up there was the regulator bringing all the other banks into the room, saying that, look, that peer of yours might be in trouble. If that peer of yours is in trouble, it's not just their problem. It's everyone else looking at you and saying, wait, hold on, how do we know that the rest of you are not in trouble? So that separation of the good and the bad bank was based on the very clear consensus that we needed to protect the integrity of the system against that inevitable skepticism. So you ended up with all these other banks becoming shareholders in African Bank. You ended up with Reserve Bank itself being a shareholder in African Bank. And that was simply done in order to protect the system from what would have been the great skepticism that regulators tend to fear. What makes the Italo story different is that I think the size of their balance sheet and obviously the concentration, which was really a provincial issue rather than a national issue, meant that the regulators didn't feel that any activities or any actions taken to try and do what they would say is correct the cause of the bank would have systemic problems for the system at large, because there was always someone willing to step in and say, if there's need to be a facilitation of payments, we'll do so. That's literally what our FNB has just signed up for. APSA had been the sponsor of the bank, so it was a bit of a different consideration, and every single institution has to be assessed on the basis of what it has, the size of its balance sheet, the exposure, and obviously the vulnerability of depositors at that point in time, and the assessment of, well, if it goes wrong, will the system freeze? And in this instance, clearly the regulators have taken the view that if Italo goes down, the system will not freeze, which was a different consideration when it came to African Bank.
Got you. Jobe, always a pleasure speaking to you, sir. You've given us so much from this conversation, and the theme around Italo makes a lot more sense. Thank you, as always, for your time, sir.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Kaya Sithole, independent analyst there, helping us fully understand where we are regarding Italo Bank, from its history and, of course, the context within which it started operating under. Essentially, no rules enabling it to operate, but had received certain exemptions within its operating capacity. But as we know right now, struggling in terms of its curatorship going forward. As Kaya has mentioned, it's the depositors who will be able to receive their money. 2.2 billion rand in total is what will be paid out. This is money that is funded and footed by National Treasury. You can actually, as a client who has deposits with Italo, go and claim your payout. The process is simple. You go to an FNB branch anywhere across the country, but you do need to prove who you are, how much you have, and of course, where your nominated account is to actually withdraw these deposits to. You need your FICA documentation, so the usual ID, proof of address, as well as proof of account. But I think beyond that, at least we as South Africans who have deposits in the bank, you're safe. You're secure. This is how the law is operating to make sure that when it comes to our money, the banks really aren't our enemies, because the regulations that have been put in place are allowing us to ensure that the rules specify that we do get a level of coverage and support. This might be extenuating circumstances for Italo, but even if you and I had to experience losses from any of our other bank accounts, the Corporation for Deposit Insurance, CODI, was launched back in April 2024. That's where a minimum of 100,000 rand of your money is essentially safe in many of the bank accounts that we have. So that's something for us to be mindful of. We have a few voice notes, but I do also want to start off with a text that we have from EB. EB says, Ibrahim, he says, I've been following the Italo situation for the longest time, as our land claim funds and investments in Durban is held with Italo to this day. But nobody has explained it in a more clearer and easy to understand manner than Mr. Sithole right now. Thank you, Kuku. Ibrahim from Cape Town. See? That's why I have smart friends to help me out when it comes to explaining key concepts. So very, very, very important. We want to hear your views, though, so get in touch. We are late for ads. We are late for the next interview, but we also want to make sure we get your thoughts, feedback, and opinions also shared. So we'll come back to your voice notes in just a moment. But stay with us, because we also will be discussing the South African Responsible Online Gambling Association and their response to National Treasury's proposed 20% taxation on online gambling revenue.
Click kaya959.co.za to download the Kaya Biz.